All right, gentlemen, we're on the final session, and the final session is called All Is Well. Why don't you guys just hold up the basket just for a second? We're going to do a brief 3-minute meditation. It won't take long. Again, what I want you to do is kind of try to sit up a little bit in your seats so that you're more straight in your seats. Get your both feet flat on the floor or relatively flat on the floor. Relax your shoulders. And put your hands in your lap or to your sides or whatever is comfortable for you and relax your shoulders. And I'm going to ask you to shut your eyes and take a deep breath through your nose and let it out slowly through your mouth. And take another deep breath through your nose. And as you let it out through your mouth, I want you to feel any tension leaving your body. Relax into your body. Think about melting into your body. Now I want you to think about the circle of life that we meditated about earlier. And I want you to see that in your mind's eye. And you are in the center of the circle of life, and I am in the center of the circle of life. And just hold that thought for a moment. And now I'm going to ask you to erase the edge of the circle. Gentlemen, we've spent a great deal of time this weekend where I've tried to convey to you my experience in Alcoholics Anonymous, and we've shared stories, and you've told stories. We've heard Ninth Step of Men's stories. We heard a lot of great stories last night in the meeting that was held. And hopefully what you've come to realize is that your experience is my experience, and my experience is your experience. But one of the things that I've realized over time is that I am absolutely convicted of my beliefs. I am. I believe what I believe because I've experienced it. If I don't experience it, I don't believe it. That's just how my mind operates. And a lot of times we talk about, well, I changed my mind. My experience is I never changed my mind. I have not once changed my mind. But my mind has been changed. And there is a subtle difference there. In theological terms, if you look at biblical scripture, you'll often see the word convert, conversion, repent. The Greek term for that is metanoia. And sometimes that is viewed as to change your mind. But what metanoia means technically in Greek is to have your mind changed. So if you come into Alcoholics Anonymous and you have an open mind and an open heart, and you participate and you take these steps, and you join the Worldwide Fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous, and you allow yourselves to be exposed to each other so that we literally rub off on each other, your mind will be changed because you'll have different, richer, and fuller experiences. And we talked earlier about God and God being like music. One of the things that we find in Alcoholics Anonymous is that our interest in and capacity for God, our view of the rhythm of life, the musical view of God, broadens and deepens. And we realize that there's not so much of a difference between certain beliefs and what are categorized as faiths and what we've owned personally experienced. Because our job here is to do the best that we can to get in tune with the infinite, whatever we ascribe that to be. And one of the things that's always important to remember, whatever the spiritual or religious background is, whenever we talk about a word such as God, what we're talking about is something that is undefinable, illimitable, without an ability to be expressed by humankind. But we are men. And we define, and we limit. And so I say, there is Peter, and there is Dale, and there is Rick, and there is Ahmad, but that's not who you are. That's just a name. That's just a pointer to who you are. You know, even in the one of the most ancient faiths, the Jewish faith, you know, they talk about God as YHVH. And they had to add vowels, Yahweh. And Yahweh actually signifies the exhalation of the breath. So when we meditate and we let that out, that means God is within us, leaving us. Yahweh. Okay? But it's not Yahweh. We have to add a vowel because we have to express. That's who we are. That's what we do. One of my favorite spiritual teachers is a guy named Anthony DeMello. And he was a priest who died in India. He had an area in India that he worked. He was a Jesuit priest, but he was a little Indian guy. But he was raised by Catholics who were Irish. So you think of this little Indian guy who speaks with an Irish accent. I mean, he was just a trip. And one of the things that he said was he told a story about how he had taken his nephew to the park. And his nephew was around 2 years old, and they go to the park, and his nephew sees a pigeon for the first time, and he's amazed. It's beautiful. It flies in. Who's ever seen this flying creature before? And he's chasing after the pigeon. And then DeMello tells him, well, that's a pigeon. You know, and pigeons, they're kind of dirty. They're nasty. And, you know, we really don't pet pigeons or try to catch pigeons. So there's lots of pigeons. So the next time the kid goes to the park, he goes, pigeon, because he's defined. And he's limited, and he's no longer interested. And Bill writes about that we're in spiritual kindergarten. And the point there is not to be childish. The point is to be childlike, to try to retain that wonder, to try to retain that amazement, to try to accept what is new with childlike energy. And that's not always easy to do. You know, I come into Alcoholics Anonymous, I'm 37 years old, but I got the social and emotional maturity of a 14-year-old on a good day. And that's the case with most of us. And, you know, that's not attractive when you're 37 years old. Some of the guys that come in when they're 21 or 22, it's kind of humorous. But at my age, it wasn't that attractive. Now, the problem is, from probably the age of 12, 13, or 14, I've been asleep spiritually. And by that I mean that I've been chasing after God in a bottle. And I've been anesthetized to life. I haven't dealt with things, okay? And I've gone, you know, a couple decades plus without really maturing socially. And now I'm sober, and now I wake up, and now I'm here, and now, hey, Ma, it ain't grand, the wind stopped blowing. Well, yeah, that's great, lamb. Get to work. Because there's a lot of work to be done. And there's a long period of reconstruction ahead. Because what happens is my ego clings to that God in a bottle. I don't know it, but I'm a spiritual seeker, and I think I've found something, but she's turned on me. She's turned on me in a wicked way, and I can't go back to her. But I'm afraid to go towards the sunlight of the Spirit. You know, you talk to Alcoholics Anonymous, and we're guys that we hide out and we play in the shadows. We play in the shadows. We're attracted to the sunlight. But it's scary. Because it's scary. Like Bill talks about in the 12 and 12. We're afraid we're going to become like the hole in the donut. We're afraid we're going to become nothing. When the reality is we're everything. We're a self-contained unit. The great reality is deep within us. All we need to do is go in there and uncover it. One of the favorite stories that I have from DeMello is he's talking about these two people. One person is in bed asleep, and his dad is talking to him. And it's a story of Jaime. And Jaime's dad comes in and says, because Jaime's not waking up. He's got to go to school. He says, Jaime, wake up, wake up. You know, it's time to go to school. And Jaime says, I don't want to go to school, Papa. I don't want to go. And the father shouts, get up. You have to go to school. And Jaime says, Papa, I don't want to go to school. I don't want to go to school. And the father says, why not? And Jaime says, well, there's three reasons. First, it's so dull. School is so dull. The kids tease me. And third, I hate school. And the father says to Jaime, well, I'm going to give you three reasons why you must go to school. First, because it is your duty. Second, because you are 45 years old. And third, because you are the headmaster of the school. Get up, Jaime. You have to go to school. Now, the point is that most people tell you that they want to get out of kindergarten, but they don't believe them. What DeMello says is all we want to do is mend our broken toys. All we want to do is go back to sleep. And that's what happens to us. We have these spiritual experiences. We have these spiritual awakenings. And then we sit back. The book says we rest on our laurels. That's good enough. But that doesn't sustain us. And what DeMello says is spirituality means waking up. All mystics are unanimous on one thing, that all is well. All is well. Right here, right now, everything is fine. And most people never get to see that all is well because they are asleep. Now, he uses the word mystic. And one of the things that I want you guys to understand is sometimes people think that that's like a really big mystical word, mystic. It's not. A mystic is just someone that is involved in and interested in mystery. It's the Greek word is mystikos. And it has the same root as mystery. Now, mystery is inexplainable, and it's revelatory. It's a mystery. There's all kinds of things in the world that are mysteries. God is a mystery. A mystery is a truth that can only be revealed through personal experience. It can never be fully defined. It can never be fully explained. It can only be experienced. And the steps are a set of these spiritual exercises that are designed to allow each of us to find and develop and maintain a conscious contact with this God of our understanding. And we've talked about that. And I got to tell you, I sponsor a lot of guys. I sponsor Protestants. I sponsor some Catholics. You know, I got some Jewish guys. I got a Jewish guy who likes Buddhism. He calls himself a Boo-Jew. I've got a Druid. You know, I'm talking like Stonehenge, Druid. You know, I got guys that sit on their surfboard and, you know, they kind of commune with nature. That's their concept of God, or they walk in the woods. It's all okay. I have a guy that refers to God as mystery. Just think about that for a minute. He just refers to God as mystery. It's all-knowing, but at the same time, it's unknowable. It can only be experienced. William James, we talked about him. Again, he's the only author cited by the big book. He's the only book cited by the big book. And what he says is this. He said, while the revelations of the mystic hold true, they hold true only for the mystic. For others, they are certainly ideas to be considered, but can hold no claim to truth without personal experience of such. That means that my personal experience may be interesting to you, but if you haven't had a similar experience, it's pretty meaningless. It's pretty meaningless. That's why we share our stories, because what our stories are our experiences. And he goes on in the varieties of religious experience to say, the sway of alcohol over mankind is unquestionably due to its power to stimulate the mystical faculties of human nature, usually crushed to earth by the cold facts and dry criticisms of the sober hour. Sobriety diminishes and says no. Drunkenness expands, unites, and says yes. That's God in a bottle. That's what I've been chasing for years until I got to Alcoholics Anonymous. And my experience is that if you don't have some type of experience and you're an alcoholic of my variety, you're not the type of guy that can just go to meetings and be okay, then one of two things will happen. You will either go back to the bottle because you know it works, even if it's just temporary, or you'll drive out into the desert with a gun and you'll shoot yourself because you know you can't drink and you know you can't be sober. And the one thing that has convinced me of my alcoholism more than anything else is when I was removed from alcohol and my life got worse, way worse. I think if I wasn't alcoholic, if I just had a problem with drinking, I would take the alcohol away and everything would go great. I'd be great. Everything's good. No problem. That's not my experience. So I want you to consider a few things, a couple of quotes from the big book. Now, to set the stage, we spend a lot of time in the doctor's opinion. We talk about the allergy, you know. We talk about the physical relationship that we have with alcohol. But by the time you get to page 23 in the big book, it tells us, therefore, the main problem of the alcoholic centers in the mind rather than in his body. What that means is I can't just take away alcohol because I have these strange mental twists that take me right back to drinking. So the problem centers in my mind, and I cannot, in and of myself, change my mind. If I participate and I'm an active engager in this program, my mind can be changed, but I can't change my mind. On page 86, it says, our thought life will be placed on a much higher plane when our thinking is cleared of wrong motives. How do we do that? We do that through the steps. And then on page 87, it says, what used to be the hunch or the occasional inspiration gradually becomes a working part of the mind. So I'm new, and I'm going through the first portion of the book, the first, essentially, four chapters, which deal primarily with steps 1 and 2. And what I'm told principally is that my mind is a dangerous neighborhood. It's not safe to go there alone. Okay, and I get that. I get that. But something happens between 3 and 9, and by the time I'm starting to do 10 and 11, where gradually, this occasional hunch or inspiration will become a working part of the mind. And that's why I believe we say that we're not God. We have to turn to something, some essence or being, whatever it is that you want to call it, which, you know, the vast majority have found deep, deep down within ourselves. A couple of things that a guy named Meister Eckhart wrote that I want you to consider, that I think applies to Alcoholics Anonymous. He said, the path of which I have spoken is beautiful and pleasant and joyful and familiar. Now, the interesting thing about any of these people that have gone through and had these spiritual experiences, particularly through meditation, they will tell you that it's not something that they don't know. They've just returned to who they really are. Meister Eckhart also says, God does not ask anything else of you except that you let yourself go and let God be God in you. So Chuck is talking about, Chamberlain is talking about, there's one problem and one solution. The one problem is conscious contact. Conscious separation is what I have. That's the main problem. The one solution is conscious contact. So the problem is conscious separation. The solution is conscious contact. And hopefully one of the things that you did when you engaged in that brief exercise of meditation is when you erased the edge of the circle, you realized that there's no way to encapsulate or confine the universe, God, and ourselves. And I would say to you, welcome to the worldwide fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous. Welcome back to who you really are. Welcome home. So what's our job? Our job is not only to live and move and have our being in this world free from alcohol, but it's to guide the next person along the same path. To tell him when to duck, to tell him when to laugh, to help him, to show him. My experience is you can't tell an alcoholic anything, but you can show him everything. You can show him everything. So again, I want to thank you. My hope and prayer for you is that you do realize and understand and appreciate that you are a vital and integral member of the Worldwide Fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous, that you are part of a brotherhood of mystics which is neither special nor unique, although we occasionally think we are. But then we hang out with each other and we're reminded of who we really are and what we really are. And we're simply one piece of a greater whole. And there is no separation. And there is no division. And we're all on the same path. We're all in the same boat, whatever analogy you want to use. And it doesn't matter who you think you are. We know who you are because you are us. Thanks for having me here. That's